If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's go Crackers with the Packers!
Hello and welcome to the Gridiron Show! And then there were two. Yes, the New England Patriots and the Atlanta Falcons will be making up the roster of the Super Bowl 51. That doesn't even make sense. So on today's show, we'll be talking about what the Steelers and the Packers both need to do. We'll be breaking down those two games. We're going to be talking all about the Super Bowl as well. And loads of other stuff. This is the Gridiron Show! So that may be the sixth time that I've ever done the intro. It's not getting any better, guys. Will, you've done about 106, so I've got a little way to go to get up to your incredible standard.
And that's just of the Gridiron Show. Don't forget the 200-odd shows we did of the old show.
Oh, yeah, exactly, exactly.
Absolutely.
Ridiculous. I think it's actually a dereliction on your part that you haven't helped me or made me do these more often. So yeah, you're basically hanging me out to dry.
Yeah, definitely 100% my fault.
Yep, there we go.
Great. Welcome to the show. We now know who will be, as Ollie said, in Super Bowl 51. The Atlanta Falcons and the New England Patriots will be making up the teams in 2 weeks' time in the NRG Stadium in Houston. And you could be watching it at our massive Super Bowl party at Bloomsbury Lanes. So you can go get a ticket at gridiron-magazine.com/SuperBowlLI or go to our Twitter at Gridiron and click on the link there. And our friends at Touchdown Trips, as we are presented by Touchdown Trips, have added a Super Bowl page to their homepage at touchdowntrips.com. So if you're a Falcons fan or a Packers fan, well, maybe if you're a Falcons fan and you're thinking, do you know what? Only the second one in our history. Who knows when we'll next go back? And maybe you're a Patriots fan and you think, 7 times in 10, 15 years, I should probably finally go. Then you can go on there as well. But Ollie, we need to start the show on a slightly somber note.
Yeah, I know.
Not asking you how you are after last night.
Why not?
Because we'll get to that. Okay. I need to apologise for my behaviour both inside the Hippodrome and on Twitter last night.
I mean, you're 100% right. You really do.
I got frustrated with some Patriots fans who were sat behind us and really behaving very, very poorly. I took that out on Twitter rather than on them personally. And then when I started to get people biting, I decided to continue winding up and trolling people. And basically my night turned into me having fun with that and then showing you all the stuff I'd managed to get people to tweet. And then as the final nail in the coffin of my behavior, I decided to block every Patriots fan I know. Between about 3 a.m. and 8 a.m. when I realised what I'd done and unblocked everyone. And those people include Matthew Sherry. So I'd apologise to Big T. I apologise to at Odyssey.
You are an absolute disgrace.
Nolhinho. And I can probably apologise to Matt Sherry in person because he's on the line. Sorry, Matt.
Yeah, I think you should be sorry, Matt.
Actually, Will, there's one other person that you need to apologise to.
Who?
The Patriots fan who you almost started a fight with. As he was leaving,
start a fight.
he was leaving the Hippodrome, it was disgraceful behaviour.
You get so boisterous in these situations, Will. You're a belligerent man.
He was being a right knob end, and I just told him he was.
He wasn't being a knob end. He was just being a Pats fan.
No. He wasn't. He was being a knob end.
I mean, I disagree, but look, I'm glad that you've seen the errors of your ways. It was very funny at the time for us all there. But, dude, come on. You're better than all of this.
I am better than that. And
really
I, and I, was, I wasn't even meant to drink before we went to I wasn't even going to drink before we went to Houston, and then I got there and there was Blue Moon flying around, which, by the way, that place, I've had the worst hangovers I've ever had drinking Blue Moon at the Hippodrome. I think that either they don't clean their taps out, or it's just really low quality beer or something, but I felt really ill today, and I didn't drink much more than I would normally drink on a night out.
I agree with that, Will.
I'm sorry.
From my Hippodrome experiences at Blue Moon, I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
I think you've hit on something there. And we don't want to slander the Hippodrome by any stretch, but I've kind of felt the same way. The other thing I'd say is that let's hope that this belligerence leaves your system, because you did almost once nearly get arrested in Arizona on the eve of the Super Bowl.
Well, hold on.
That was Liam Blackburn's fault, but you...
Yeah, Liam Blackburn nearly got arrested. And then when the police officers decided that Liam Blackburn starting on you meant that they should split the two of you up, send Liam on his own into the night and wouldn't let us walk with Liam, meaning that Liam walked off into the middle of Scottsdale, Arizona, with no idea where he was or what he was doing, and they just sent him off on his own. And I merely pointed out to the police officer that that seemed like quite a dangerous thing to do, and he told me to shut up, or I can't remember his exact words, but basically he told me to shut up, or he'd make me shut up. So I maybe told him to stop being such a see you next Tuesday.
And that was risky. I think, in fairness, you were correct, because the night ended with Liam leaving his identification and wallet inside of a taxi. I think he was robbed a little bit within that process, and was also convinced he'd handed his Super Bowl ticket to a taxi driver briefly.
So I apologise for my behaviour, and I promise the Pats fans trolling stops now. They were brilliant last night, and we're going to get into all of that as well. But we do have two people on the show today, in Ollie Hunter, in Matt Sherry, who had very differing fortunes yesterday evening. So I'm going to leave it up to you guys to decide which game and which teams we talk about first.
Let's talk about the Packers first.
Oh, that was so defeated, so upset, Ollie.
Well, I don't want to hear Sherry's thoughts on the Patriots first up. I think people might turn off afterwards, so or during. So let's get his thoughts on the Packers and the Falcons. And
we just said we were going to stop this, and then you've immediately launched back into it again.
Launched back into what?
Winding up Pats fans.
I wasn't winding up Pats fans.
Look,
Pats fans wouldn't turn off.
Matt Ryan ran in a touchdown through another four. I'm trying to actually remember now.
It was four.
As the Falcons ran out 44-21 winners over the Green Bay Packers. They were 24-0 up at halftime, 31-0 up about 2 minutes into that second half, thanks to Julio Jones, who just increasingly looks like the best receiver in the NFL, not just this season, but overall, catching a slant route and going 73 yards for a touchdown. The Packers attempted a bit of a fight back late on, and there's plenty to be said for the Packers having injury problems throughout this game and missing key players and everything else, but I think this was a combination of a team who look absolutely shattered after an 8 week run, which had been incredible, going up against an absolute juggernaut in the Atlanta Falcons, and maybe we should have seen this coming.
Yeah, we should have done. And I think it was,
we were blinkered by the Aaron Rodgers brilliance of recent weeks.
Heart-ruling head. Aaron Rodgers couldn't carry on doing this for 9 games in a row. It was really unlikely. And the Green Bay defense is so bad that it made the Falcons offense, which is admittedly very good, look even better than it actually is.
And look, we're going to get into what the Packers need to do, but let's start off with the Falcons. And before we start off on their offense, I want to talk about their defense, because I was really impressed with the way they came out and started this game. And obviously the Packers missing a field goal very early on was an issue as well. But the way they came out, first drive touchdown, second drive field goal, and the defense came out and they did something that no defense seems to do against Aaron Rodgers, which people don't go hard at. And they don't go for the blitz. It's not unlike the Patriots where That you don't blitz Tom Brady because he gets the ball out so quickly, so you need to make sure you're covering. You don't generally blitz Aaron Rodgers because he's got such great pocket presence that he tends to escape the blitz, and then you've let him get out of the pocket where he makes his best plays. But that's not what Dan Quinn immediately went after Rodgers, and it was on that side of the ball where increasingly over recent weeks the Falcons got better and better and better. And obviously Vic Beasley's been a huge part of that, but I thought Rashid Hageman up the middle was absolutely brilliant last night. I thought that Keanu Neal had another great game. I mean, I had serious doubts about what the Falcons could do on that defensive side once going up against Rodgers, and whether those guys who'd been improving over the season hadn't come up against a really good offense. But they proved every doubt I had wrong last night and were excellent through the first three quarters.
And I think my takeaway is, and this sounds ridiculous given that the run they had, is I still don't think the Packers' offense was that good. I mean, and I think Dallas showed the blueprint in the second half of that game as to how he could undo it. And I think what a lot of teams started to do was what Dallas actually did themselves in the regular season matchup, which was play a lot of coverage and not send too many rushes. But then I think Dallas in the second half of that game really slowed them down significantly by sending pressure, particularly up the middle. And when we did the first podcast of the playoffs, that's kind of the point I made of the importance of that pressure up the middle. And to me, I still think that the same problems existed with the Packers' offense in that they have wide receivers who aren't brilliant at getting open. And Aaron Rodgers, for as great as he is, still is just his style of quarterbacking is not the Tom Brady, Peyton Manning style of quarterbacking, and that's getting the ball out of your hands quickly. So in that instance, it becomes really difficult to move the ball. And I mean, I did kind of see it coming. I mean, obviously wasn't on the podcast, but I chatted to you guys privately and to Liam and a couple of others, And I just think that Dallas really showed something in the second half, and it was great to see Atlanta. I don't think you see it enough that teams take note of something like that and they put it into practice themselves. And I'm sure, Ollie, you'd agree with that. You've watched that team a lot this year. I think they head into the off-season knowing that as good as the recent run was, they've got a lot of work to do all over the team, but on offense as much as anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and, you know, we'll come back to that in a bit. I think the Falcons... If you think back to the game especially, and you think back to Green Bay on offense, my overriding memory is of the amount of pressure that did come up the middle, and the collapsing of a banged up line, and Rodgers having less time to throw to his receivers. So on offense, the Falcons were outstanding. I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, the sun's going to shine tomorrow, but the Falcons were great on offense. Everything that they did with the two running backs and Julio being Julio, it was just it was really great to watch. I just hope that it wasn't because that Green Bay secondary and the horrendous lack of pass rush. I really hope that it wasn't just because of that.
And look, here is the thing with that side of the ball is that what really great teams do, particularly great offenses, is they find your weakness and they exploit it. And we'll say the same about the Patriots coming up when we talk about the Steelers' zone defense. But they knew that you had cornerback problems. I didn't realize Sam Shields was, he's spoken out today, still suffering from headaches from the concussion he got in week one. I'd be concerned he's going to even ever make it back into football again, even though he's saying that he wants to. You know, that is the sort of... that length of a concussion, the second concussion of his career, to be still having problems 17, 18 weeks later is a real concern. Mm. And the moment he came out of the lineup, it kind of ruined everything that Green Bay could do on defense, because Dom Capers is a man who likes to bring pressure from the linebackers. He does love a blitz and an interesting blitz concept. But the problem is with that is when you don't trust your corners in man coverage, and we talked about Ladarius Gunter having to have support from a safety at all times, it seems. When you've not got that trust in your defensive backs, then you don't bring the same amount of pressure up front. And I don't think this defense is as bad as it's played, I think that they have had real problems with scheme and real problems with the defensive backs. I mean, we also saw Micah Hyde go out early. I was going to say this on the offensive line. You're talking about internal pressure, Sherry. Like, losing both their guards early on was really a negative for them as well. But
as well as trading one of their best cards away in the off season.
Yeah, of course it was. Yeah, absolutely. But I looking at it, and it was almost the perfect storm on the defensive side of the ball between Clay Matthews showing such degradation this year, and we're hearing all sorts of stuff about the injuries he's been carrying for a year and a half, and how much is it to do with that? I mean, he's only got a season left on his deal, and they can opt out of it, only suffer a $4 million cap hit. I wouldn't be that surprised to see Clay Matthews not on the Packers next season. But if I'm the Packers, and let's go into this, because we're going to talk about the Falcons a lot in the next 13 days, 14 days. If a lot of people are calling for Dom Capers' head, and I think he was put in a horrendous situation without those corners, but listen to this list of defensive backs who are out of contract this season. AJ Boye, Tremaine Johnson, Logan Ryan, Stephen Gilmore, Dre Kirkpatrick. There is a slew of big-name corners who are high-level performing corners who could be potentially available this year. And I know Green Bay aren't a team that spend big in free agency, but actually they've got some cap space there. I think that they have to go out, and they have to go out hard on that defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I'm again interested in Ali's take on this, but I mean, not re-signing Casey Hayward was ridiculous. I mean, and this is the problem now. We're at the point where that Ted Thompson does what he does. He doesn't sign free agency draft players, but then you have to keep the guys in the building, and to let him go, to let Josh Sitton go. I think that it's just bad mismanagement personnel-wise. And for all you can criticise the coaching staff, and to an extent Rodgers at the start of the season, I think ultimately it comes down to them not putting the pieces in place. And I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of Packers fans who agree, but I think it's time for Ted Thompson to move on, and it'd be interesting to see if Elliot Wolf, who interviewed for the 49ers GM job and is the guy in waiting there, would assume that position. And Dom Capers, it's like Monte Kiffin. These guys are brilliant defensive minds who sadly at times just passed them by and they've not evolved, and Capers has been a problem now for several years. I think back to the Kaepernick playoff games, and yeah, I think there's a catalogue of things that need sorting out, and it starts kind of at the top level, really.
Yeah, I totally agree. And when you think back to both of the playoff games in Dallas and in Atlanta, the lack of ingenuity when it comes to some of those defensive plays and either rushing or stopping rushing the passer, sorry, or stopping that, especially the mid-range, middle of the field type passes as well. Capers, it seemed like, has run out despite what Will said of the injuries and how that's affected them, and Matt as well, how he doesn't have the right pieces in there anyway. Regardless of that, you work with what you've got, and he seems to have run out of ideas. All of the packages, blitz wise or not, it was all very obvious, and no wonder Atlanta figured it out after a week from watching the Dallas Cowboys in that second half. So yeah, I think from the top there's an awful lot of things that have gone wrong. Aaron Rodgers said that Jared Cook needs to be top of the priority list.
Yeah, he said they need to reload a little bit, didn't they? You've also got to think about the fact that offensive line was great this year, even with Josh Sitton out. J.C. Tretter and T.J. Lang, both free agents this offseason. I think you need to bring both of those guys back, as well as Jared Cook. You'd need to... I also think, even though Ty Montgomery was a good player this season, this draft has some good running backs in it. Go out and look and try and get a proper three down back. I'm not sure you're going to get one of those top two guys, because I think they'll be gone by the time you get down to 29. I don't imagine they're going to trade up, but there are people in the kind of middle to late rounds, apparently. I haven't done a huge amount of draft research this year. Yeah, I think you need to go out and try and find yourself a running back as well.
Well, there's been some talk about Alvin Kamara from Tennessee, who the Packers have seen and like the look of. There's always, Leonard Fournette, Dalvin Cook, Christian McCaffrey. There's the kind of the opposite of Devontae Freeman, Deonta Foreman, from Texas, who could be an interesting player as well. But personally, I know, having watched a load of Stanford this and last season, Christian McCaffrey would be ideal. But the Packers won't trade up. They won't do anything like that. They're very safe. Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy, when it comes to things like drafting and free agency, they're extremely safe, and they have a clear idea of what they're going to do, and that's that. And then they do it. Barely anything is made during free agency or drafting, which is sexy. But 6 years in a row going to the playoffs, 6 years in a row only winning one Super Bowl, that's something to be worried about.
Is there anything else you guys want to say about this game or about this Packers team looking into next season?
Just finally on the Packers, I mean, ironically, I think the biggest indictment into the way they run the operation is Jared Cook and Julius Peppers, the two guys they've actually signed, and even Charles Woodson going back a few years. Mm. You're talking that when they've signed guys, they've come in and made a big impact. So they can clearly evaluate the right talent to get the guys they need, but they need to just do more of it. And either Ted Thompson changes philosophically, because at the moment they've got one of the best quarterbacks of all time. They've won one championship, but they've not been close to winning a second one. They've never been there again. I mean, you could argue the championship game against the Seahawks, that they should have won that one, I guess. But it's not like they're knocking on the door every year when they've got Aaron Rodgers, a quarterback. They need to do more of it. So either Ted Thompson changes his philosophy, or they need to move on, I think.
And we're going to talk about another team after we've talked about these four teams this weekend who have made a big move, have a great quarterback, but not necessarily the best bit of roster building. Ding dong, the Grigson's dead. We will be talking about that as well. I forgot to mention it at the top. As you all know, I'm pretty elated about this. We'll get onto that as well. But let's talk Patriots-Steelers, because it was... Well, it was another masterclass, as far as I'm concerned, from Bill Belichick and that defensive side of the ball with Matt Patricia. Because whilst this storyline will be all about the Tom Brady redemption tour coming off that four-game suspension to start the season and then how well he's played since then, and yeah, he threw for an incredible 384 yards and three touchdowns. Chris Hogan matching Julio Jones' stat line of 9 catches, 180 yards, 2 touchdowns, one of the weirder things to come out of this weekend. But the big thing that really stood out to me from this New England Patriots 36-17 win over the Pittsburgh Steelers is something we talked about on the podcast last week, which was, if you're going to stop this Steelers team, there is a very clear way you have to basically stop the run. And yes, Le'Veon Bell went out early, but as we've seen previously, we know D'Angelo Williams can come in and can make an impact. We talked about the Chiefs in the fourth quarter last week, went to 5 linemen, confused the Steelers front, made each of the linemen man up, which means they can't get to the second level, can't create those gaps in that space for the running backs. And the Patriots did that from moment one. They played, they absolutely exploited the Steelers zone defense. They absolutely, it was just a masterclass in preparing and coaching. And it's the reason that even though this Falcons offense is looking historically good, you still can't even begin to count out the Patriots, because give them 2 weeks to plan for a team with that much tape on them, and they seem to be able to outcoach anyone.
Yeah, and the funny part is that truthfully, if the Patriots hold the Falcons to around 20 points or less, which is what they've done to every team now for several weeks, this is an all-time great defense statistically, and to a ridiculous level. I mean, they already give up less points per game than Denver last season, and the competition wasn't good, and I'm not suggesting it is, but it's so different to any great defense I've ever seen, if that is what they end up becoming, because you'll see times in games like last night where the quarterback's completing pass after pass after pass. Ben Roethlisberger completed 10 in a row at one point last night. But they just don't let teams score points very often, and it's staggering, really. I mean, I watched the first quarter and a half last night and thought that they could be in trouble here. There's no pass rush. They're completing passes. And then you look up at the start of the fourth quarter and the Steelers have scored 9 points. And it amazes me. And I mean, people... I saw one guy on Twitter ask us if Bill Belichick and Tom Brady will retire. I mean, you're talking Mike Tomlin will be classed as one of the better coaches in the league, maybe a top 10 guy, and you see the huge difference between the quality of coaching last night, and And why would Bill Belichick retire? It's getting easy for him, I think. I'm genuinely.
Yeah, those two individuals, same question was asked on the NFL UK fans group on Facebook, and they're just both so competitive, and Brady doesn't show the physical breakdown that you've seen in other quarterbacks when they've got to this sort of age. I'd be stunned if either of them walked away at this point, particularly get five now, and then Tom Brady go for a sixth and become that completely out and out, stand out in front of everyone else quarterback in terms of the number of rings, in terms of, I think he's already there, but you win two more if you win next week, and then you win another one beyond that, and it's, there's no argument can be had at that point.
I mean, the funny part is that you looked at the start of the season and you thought, well, there are a lot of guys to re-sign, so their window's closing a bit. I mean, half of those guys are off the team at the moment, and they're in the Super Bowl. They've got $60 million worth of cap room in the off-season. I mean, they could get even better next year, and it's just...
Let's talk about that defense, because you mentioned that. I thought Malcolm Brown and Alan Branch both looked brilliant last night, and they forced the Steelers away from the run, which... we're going to talk about what the Steelers need to do in this offseason, but I think they really... The fact that pretty much since Thanksgiving, the Steelers have been a run-first team when they've gone on this winning run, and when you saw the number of drops from the Coats of the world, you saw who was the receiver who stepped out the back of the end zone and then made a complete rookie error on that one. There were so many issues with that Steelers offense that really were shown up, but they had either Shane McClellan, Rob Ninkovich, or even Dante Hightower at times were getting onto that line, playing as that fifth lineman, completely able to stop the run, and that's what makes me think against the Falcons they could do something similar. And then on the other side, let's start talking about these Steelers, because we talked about two or three matchups on Friday, and what we said was about the ability for the Patriots to get mismatches on the Steelers. The Steelers really needed to show something interesting in order to stop that from happening. I don't think they managed it in what they did with their blitz packaging, etc. And almost as if it was exactly as predicted, Lawrence Timmons getting one-on-ones with Chris Hogan and with Julian Edelman on more than one occasion. If you're getting that sort of mismatch with a 30-year-old linebacker who's not particularly great in coverage, then you're going to beat teams. And the Steelers, there's work needs to be done on both sides of the ball. But on that defensive side, it's been so exciting to see Bud Dupree, Ryan Shazier, all these young, exciting, fast players coming through. Sean Davis and Artie Burns have both had a good year this year. But you do feel like James Harrison and Lawrence Timmons can't continue to perform to the level they have over the last 8 weeks.
Nah, they've not got a chance to do that. I mean, I just thought that the coaching-wise, the Steelers got it so badly wrong. It was pathetic, to be honest. I mean...
your hatred for Mike Tomlin is almost as bad as my Twitter hatred for the Patriots.
It is ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, at the end of the day, I said to Ollie earlier on, like, admittedly, they don't have the kind of cornerbacks who you would trust explicitly in man-to-man coverage. But by the same account, there was no way in hell they were going to win that game playing zone like they did all night. It just was never going to... There's no way they...
True, but I saw a lot of people saying, why aren't they manning up, why aren't they manning up? Well, they're his own defence. And if you train for something all week, it's like, to give a soccer analogy, it's like if you've been playing 4-4-2 for the last 2 years with the same back four, and suddenly you switch to a back three and wing backs without doing it in training at all, you're going to see guys get out of position, you're going to see guys lose their... Like, it wouldn't have worked. I just genuinely think they were the perfect match for the Patriots.
Being a zone defence like that doesn't work in the NFL anymore. I mean, especially against quarterbacks like Tom Brady, you really have to mix up what you're doing. It can't be what... And the Falcons is going to be interesting in 2 weeks because they're not a zone team, but they're very much a we-do-what-we-do team. And I'm just not sure it works against a certain level of quarterback. You've got to disguise what you're doing. And, I mean, you say that as well, Will, and I agree with you. I do kind of agree on that point about them being a zone team, and that's what they are. But if they're a zone team, why are the guys wide open on virtually every play? Like, at least if you're going to be a zone team, you should be able to execute it to even a half-decent degree of solidity. It was just pathetic. I mean, Chris Hogan will never have an easy night in his life. I could have probably had 100 receiving yards based on how wide open he was often. It was just terrible, wasn't it?
And you've got to say that The mismatches was an issue. Actually, I've really liked that Steelers secondary over recent weeks. Artie Burns, Sean Davis, Mancheray. I thought Ross Cockrell had a really good year as well, and he's a guy who he's moved above William Gay in the depth chart over this season, and he's a free agent again. He needs to be re-signed because I think they can still probably get him for quite cheap. But we said it time and time again, they hadn't come up against a well-schemed offense in that 8-9 week run. The best they'd had was Buffalo. And then the Chiefs last week, who should have been that team, just absolutely whiffed. Like, Lord knows what happens. It just fell apart. Like, they just completely choked. I think the Steelers played well, but I don't think the Chiefs represented what they are in any way, shape, or form. Whereas the Patriots had a bad week against the Texans and came out winners. And then the Steelers tried to do some of the same stuff the Texans did without the same quality in the backfield, the defensive backfield. And the Patriots had a much, much better night than they had anyway. And those two things combined. And yeah, this looked like a blowout from the first 5 minutes.
The only thing I'd say, on kind of the defensive stuff again, is the last time the Steelers beat the Patriots, it was a few years ago. I think it was right around that era when Sanchez was getting the Jets to AFC Championship games. But it was at Heinz Field, and keep in mind that Keith Butler is running Dick LeBeau's scheme. It's slightly different, but it's pretty much the same thing. And that's exactly what Dick LeBeau did. He played man-to-man coverage. Nobody expected it. The Patriots didn't expect it. And the Steelers won. So if I was Mike Tomlin, and that game was a complete mismatch to me looking at it at the start. I never thought for 1 minute it was going to be a close game. You've got to do something that is going to surprise the opponent and give yourselves a chance to win. And if Mike Tomlin thought going into that game that the Steelers had a chance to win with that game plan, then he's deluded. And part of being a head coach in the NFL is to look. It's all well and good scouting opponents. You have to be able to scout your own team. And self-scouting is actually what New England do better than any team in the league by a distance. He should have been able to look at that team and think, similar to what Bill O'Brien did last week with the Texans. They changed what they did. They took some risks and thought, we need to do something different. And I just thought the predictable game plan just played right into the Patriots' hands.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. On the self-scouting thing, I mean, Jamie Collins is a prime example. Sort of player who, on talent, should really be someone who you try and keep around. But Carl Van Noy had a great night last night. And we've seen it time and time again where Belichick seems to bring in the right sort of players, if not the best players, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, he gets amazing at what they do. And that sounds like an obvious thing, but I would say probably close to 31 of the teams in the NFL don't do it, and that's why the Patriots are in their 7th Super Bowl in 16 years.
There you go. Ollie, you've really not had any thoughts on this. You've sat quietly. Is that because after the early game last night, you turned to the drink?
That's pretty much it, yep. listening to you guys, there wasn't too much more to add. I thought, especially on the game itself, what was interesting was how Belichick had obviously, I mean, they all do their homework, but had obviously seen that this is the ideal way to beat the Steelers, and executed to with metronomic precision how to beat these Steelers. So, I think these the Patriots, the way that they're playing now and the confidence that they've got, and they're doing it all without Rob Gronkowski.
Which is not being talked about enough, by the way. He is one of the best three offensive players in the NFL. For them to be in the Super Bowl without him is doubly impressive.
But, and I think it highlights
some Martellus Bennett dancing around last night.
Absolutely.
But I think it also highlights how well that, comparing to the Packers, how well that roster has been constructed. And they saw that, okay, Gronk can get injured. They've played two tight end sets a lot before anyway, so if he is injured, let's bring in one of the best top five tight ends over the last 3 or 4 years in Martellus Bennett. And it's a need which was addressed, but also thought about in a multitude of ways, and it's worked out for them because Bennett stepped up when Gronk has been out. And other teams, specifically the Browns, say, but in this context, the Packers, they don't seem to do that. And Ted Thompson, especially, if we see that he doesn't address the needs at cornerback, at linebacker, at re-signing certain players, if they don't do that, then you can see another year of making the playoffs, or maybe not, because the Vikings are going to be stronger next year, so the Lions and the Bears. Another year of mediocre, or not of allowing Aaron Rodgers' talent to be wasted.
Let's talk about what else the Steelers need to do in this offseason, because we've mentioned a couple of things, but in terms of the defense, I think that linebacker position is the place to focus. But I think an edge rusher as well, because whilst I like Dupree, I think that he's not a pure kind of bend the edge kind of guy, and James Harrison, like we said, he can't do what he's done over the last 8 weeks again next year. I'm sorry, I just don't see it. So I think that would be a massive thing to me, is to go out there and get somebody who can get to the quarterback.
In terms of the overall AFC picture, they need to somehow lift the Patriots out from inside of their own heads as well, because if you're turning up for a game at Gillette Stadium and putting chains and a padlock on the locker room door, which is what the Steelers did last night, then you're already kind of beaten before the game begins, I think. Did people see that? Have you seen that picture?
What picture?
The Steelers put a padlock on their locker room door last night, so Patriots staff couldn't get in.
That's amazing.
That's how far wedged inside the heads they are. So I think that is something that they need to get out of their systems. But yeah, I mean, I'd agree with you. Well, they don't need anything on offense if Martavis Bryant comes back. He is amazing.
That's it. Absolutely. The pass catchers last night really let them down. And we talked about this with the Falcons. If you double Julio Jones, that actually plays into their scheme, because it means one of those other guys is getting open. If you double Antonio Brown, everyone else is just going to drop the bloody ball. But you've got Ladarius Green coming back from injury. He looked good in that 4-5 game stretch. And you've got Martavis Bryant, as long as he stops doing drugs, him coming back as well. Bosh.
It sounds like he is going to stop doing drugs as well, doesn't it? He's
hooray!
Into the wilderness for a few months, hasn't he?
Sorry, Ollie, I jumped on you then.
I was going to say exactly the same thing. Outside of Antonio Brown, the drop-off is absolutely gargantuan when it comes to those receivers.
Darius Haywood-Bey is listed as their second receiver on their current depth chart.
Eli Rogers hasn't come along. Sammy Coates drops the ball all the time. Kobe Hamilton's the guy that stepped out of bounds.
Yeah.
So
I disagree on Eli Rogers. I think there's something to work with there. But I think if you had Rogers inside and then Brown and Martavis Bryant outside, then Rodgers becomes the guy he should be, which is a second/third receiver.
But Eli Rodgers, Matt, is a second year guy, and
he is, but that's what I mean. He's got time to develop.
I don't know, man. I think now's the time where you're looking at your rookie receivers to push on, rather than a second year guy who still, you know, hasn't done anything really. I mean, he's made a couple of good catches earlier on in this season, a bit last season, but you expect more when you're missing Martavis Bryant. I don't know. When you look at the other side of the ball, and I know you wanted to talk about this as well, it seems like, especially in this era where there are a lot of, you need three cornerbacks on your team on the field as part of your defensive 11. That there is another huge need for them, despite the likes of Burns and William Gay and et al. Doing rather well. There needs to be, Ross Cockrell was the other one I was trying to think of. They need to upgrade those guys, and the free agency list, and we spoke about it with the Packers, it's unreal, some of the guys that are available.
I would also say, whilst I've sat here whilst you guys were chatting, looking at 3-4 outside pass rushers available on free agency market this offseason. If you've got cap space, you've got Chandler Jones becoming available and Melvin Ingram. Oof. Melvin Ingram should command absolutely top dollar this season. And if I'm the Steelers, that's the guy
He's a better player than Jones.
Say again?
I've seen Jones a lot. He's a better player than Chandler Jones. He should get more than he does.
Yeah, absolutely. This is what I'm saying. He would be my number one guy.
Yeah, I agree completely. And the other thing that the Steelers need is that they could do with the start of a succession plan for Roethlisberger as well.
100%, yeah. Possibly drafting a quarterback that's going to sit behind Big Ben for the next 2 years. Learn from the big guy. Because the drop-off in Big Ben's performances over the last 8, 9, 10 weeks of this season has been really startling and actually rather worrying. And when you've got Zapp Mettenberger and Landry Jones behind him, that they're not guys that are gonna that you could expect to come in and be the face of the franchise when Roethlisberger goes. Roethlisberger will be coming into his 13th season in the NFL. Okay, Brady's been doing it for donkey's years as well, but he's starting to come to the end of his time. Is there someone in the draft that, similar to Roethlisberger, that is that pocket passer that they could work with? Well, perhaps Patrick Mahomes, who I saw it for the Texas Tech Red Raiders. And he could be a guy. I know Simon Clancy is big on him. If they can get him in, maybe in the second round, he might go in the first. Something like that. Get him in the organization. Get him working with everybody there, learning that offense. Sack off Mettenberger and Jones, and let's get someone in that if and when, because Big Ben will go down, can come in and start learning that offense.
Right, very quickly, we're going to talk about the couple of moves going outside. There's a few other bits of news we need to talk about. Just both of you, very quickly, initial thoughts, 2 weeks out, your pick can change another 10 times between now and a week on Sunday, but just right now, how are you feeling about Super Bowl 51?
I mean, you're wasting your time asking me, aren't you? halfway through yesterday's first game, I was thinking, even if the Patriots get there, they're going to lose. I'm not convinced they'll win by about 14 points. So.
We're putting it into the magazine for this next edition. For all of us have made our pick, our MVP, etc. But I'll say now what I've said to you already. I've picked the Patriots for the magazine at this point, just because of what I saw in terms of coaching last night. And I like Dan Quinn a lot, and I think Kyle Shanahan. I'm so fearful that he's not going to be the 49ers' next head coach, because that isn't locked up yet, because he was so good last night. I got so excited and then had to remind myself that he's not our head coach yet. He is the best pure offensive mind in the league this season and right now. But Belichick, Patricia, the way they coach that defense, the way they scheme, that's what does it for me. And it's going to be the seventh time, and you'll hear, here's some stats you're going to hear a huge amount over the next few weeks. It'll be the seventh time we've got the number one scoring offense facing the number one scoring defense in the Super Bowl. The top scoring defense is 5-1 in those games. And yes, when I put that on Twitter last night, everyone went to me, yeah, but this Patriots defense isn't the same as that Seahawks defense from 3 years ago. It's not the same as that Broncos defense from last year. Okay, it's not got the same specialty players, but you feel like that experience, that coaching experience, all of that combined, it might just be that step too far. But you know what? I've underestimated the Falcons at every stage of this playoffs. So maybe Falcons fans are delighted I'm picking against them, because I've picked against them every week, and they've gone to the Super Bowl.
My concern, and it might, concern might be strange right as a Patriots fan, but I'm mainly a fan of the game, and I would genuinely like a good Super Bowl. My concern is that Atlanta do what Carolina did last season, and I almost think sometimes when you've got 2 weeks to think about it, and it's New England on the other side, and you've got all that time to think about how good they are, and you can overthink it. It can, by the time game day comes around, you can freeze. And Matt Ryan's had that reputation in his career, although I do think a lot of that is slightly unfair. And I just think that the Falcons are so much like Carolina last year, same division obviously, but that kind of come from nowhere team and take the league by storm. And we all saw what happened to the Panthers in that game, and I do kind of, in the back of my mind, fear that we could see that again.
It's quite a good analogy. Everyone gushing about the quarterback and the coaches and the coaching and all of that. But for me, I don't think that the Patriots have faced anything like an offense like the Falcons all
year. No, they haven't.
Not even close.
They faced
three good quarterbacks this year, and one of them was Carson Palmer, who fell apart this year. Russell Wilson torched them, and the Steelers were not good last night. Those are the three best quarterbacks they faced.
You can't read either side. Russell Wilson torched them. That was the game after they traded Collins, and they didn't know what they were on defense. But by the same account,
the Steelers, and if the Patriots' defense is greater than the sum of its parts, the Steelers' offense is less than the sum of its parts. So.
That, yeah, you're entirely right. And the way that Lev Bell goes out, Antonio Brown is double covered. Big Ben isn't the same Big Ben of 2 years ago. They haven't faced anything anywhere near as good as the Falcons in, actually on probably not on both sides of the ball, but certainly on offense. And the Falcons are on such a roll; they're a juggernaut at the moment on offense. There is so much going in their favor that I think they could turn them over, but. I did say that for the magazine, so you'd have someone picking the Falcons. Okay, fair enough.
Right, just to get away from the stuff, because we're going to be talking so much more about this game over upcoming weeks, and I think we've already said there's not going to be a show later this week, although maybe me and Ollie might do one from the airport if we're bored, and we've got all the equipment with us, because we will do.
If you do that, it should basically just be a Royal Rumble preview show, shouldn't it?
Someone did tweet us and say, can you do a Royal Rumble review show? And
the opening night is generally a farce anyway, so that Monday show is basically going to be me humming the Goldberg theme on the microphone.
Don't know what you're on about.
Oh, you will, Ollie. Ollie, if you get, like, Will last night drunk, it's going to be so much fun. right. But let's just talk about the other bits and pieces of news going on around the NFL right now. As we know, the 49ers continue their search for a head coach and a GM. It sounds like they're going to be interviewing again on Friday with Kyle Shanahan. A little bit of news that I quite liked before we get on to the big Colts news. Washington have promoted Greg Minuski to the position of defensive coordinator, and that means that one of our very favourites in the league, Jim Tomsula, is back doing what he does best, working with defensive lines. He did a brilliant job of that when he was in San Francisco. He loves the UK from his time here, and he is back in coaching in Washington. So, big, big fan of that. But obviously, the massive news is the man who forever will be tarnished by handing a first-round pick for an already busted running back in Trent Richardson.
To be fair, he was widely lauded for that move when it happened.
I don't remember lauding him on our show, I know that much. Ryan Grigson is no longer the GM of the Indianapolis Colts. Bizarrely, it's not been connected with the loss of their head coach as well in Chuck Pagano. It sounds like at the moment he is going to be staying for the 2017 season. But yeah, Andrew Luck's already 27, and for them to be wasting a quarterback talent like they've got, and I felt like this throughout the Manning years as well, to be fair, the Colts aren't a particularly well-run organization who have managed to luck into a couple of really good quarterbacks. Let's hope they can bring in a GM who can build around him now.
I think that was the understatement of the year when they've got a drug addict running the show. It's just insane. And I mean, they've made a complete hash of this as well. They've missed out on several GM candidates already. I mean, it's ludicrous to pair the new GM with Pagano, because that's not going to work for the next season. And it's just ridiculous, isn't it? They're a farce. They're right up there with the 49ers for the most farcical organisation in the NFL at the moment, I think.
If you type in Grigson on Google and it comes up with those three top stories, one of them says Colts reportedly hired psychologists to help ex-GM Grigson get along with Coach Pagano. I mean, that kind of tells it all, doesn't it? The two people, they weren't working together. It affected every single facet of roster building, of drafting, of free agency, of gameplay, of every single thing that the Colts have been about over the last two or three years. It's a move that had to happen from Jim Irsay. Is anyone surprised that Pagano's still there?
Before we get on to Pagano, Pat McAfee tweeted out tweeted out, thank God. And Jarrell Freeman tweeted out, well, that took longer than expected. We had unwarranted arrogance just ran into a brick wall called karma, was something that Pat McAfee said. Yeah, these are players on the team, slating, like, who are celebrating that the GM is being kicked out.
You never say that, do you? It's ridiculous. And then, I mean, for that to be permeating the building just tells you everything. This thing where they've spent the off season going for John Gruden and Peyton Manning, but not firing anyone, and now they have fired people literally 3 days before scouting season starts in at the Senior Bowl. It's just a farce, isn't it? I've never seen anything like it. Like, yeah, obviously it's a good move to get rid of them, but I mean, do you back dare say to choose the right guy to come in? Is Gano going to be there? I mean, I read a report last night that they're going to go all out for Kyle Shanahan, so. If I'm Chuck Pagano, I'd just resign and say, well, my reputation can only be enhanced by resigning now, because it's just a complete farce. And I mean, there's that element. There's also the element that Andrew Luck needs to play better. I mean, he had a really good year this year, but still was the guy who threw the terrible interception in the game against Houston that sealed them not making the playoffs. So Luck needs to play better as well. I don't think it's all Gregson and it's all Pagano. I think Luck.
There is an issue. Yes, I know that you have that issue with Andrew Luck, but as a 49ers fan, and we've not talked a lot about the 49ers this year, so allow me just once to talk about them. It does worry me that even with Jim Irsay being a mess, you've gone from a situation where I thought the 49ers did the right thing by waiting, and they've had Kyle Shanahan fall into their lap by doing it. I don't understand why every year teams rush out to hire the first head coaching candidate, the hot candidate, and go and do it like immediately. It has to have somebody in place within 2 weeks of the season ending. You know, I think take your time a little bit, make sure you interview a good number of people, make sure you really do your due diligence. But if you're offered the Colts roster against the 49ers roster, even with the Jim Irsay issue, you're going to probably think to yourself, well, with Andrew Luck and a few more bits of talent there, that's where I want to be. And I am slightly concerned. There's a lot of talk about them going after George Patton, the guy from the Vikes, who the 49ers were looking at as their number one for the GM. Now everyone else seems to have turned them down. And you mentioned the Kyle Shanahan thing as well. So it just has concerned me slightly that suddenly a new player has entered the game, and that new player has Andrew Luck, and we've got Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, it should do, but I mean, and I agree with your point about not rushing in. I think the teams do that far too much. You see it, I mean, as soon as the first guy was hired this year, within 3 days the rest are hired because everybody panics. But ultimately, you've got to fire the guys first, which the Colts just ignored. And I mean, they've quite clearly offered John Gruden the head coaching job at some point in this off-season. So how they can keep Pagano in place with that as knowledge is ridiculous, and now you're going to pair him with a GM who he may not get along with all over again. It's just preposterous, isn't it?
Just so you know, booking in some pretty big names on Radio Row right now.
Who are we getting?
Just confirmed Malcolm Jenkins for Thursday afternoon.
I'll ask him about the Eagles fans who think that his performances and interest has dropped off significantly this year. I didn't quite see it, but not too keen. The Eagles fans that I was sat around were not too keen on Malcolm Jenkins at all.
We've got Demaryius Thomas coming to join us.
Who?
Demaryius Thomas coming to join us.
What does interest me on Eagles fans chat is DeSean Jackson apparently wants to go back to Philadelphia, which is all of my dreams coming true, because when he was at Philadelphia, his Twitter replies was the best thing on the internet. He could have literally tweeted that he'd flown to another city, dropped in on a parachute and give aid to a load of homeless children, and they'd have been saying, why aren't you studying film? It was amazing.
I think Demaryius Thomas is a great get, Will. I know you just got pied by Matt Sherry, but that's fine. Well done, man.
So yeah, I'm just booking these in. I'm just saying, we're getting some great interviews, mate. Come on.
Yeah, good work. I was backing you up.
Thanks.
You have all the credit you get, Wilson.
Yeah, I quite like the Wilson Palacios nickname that you've given me via our communication today. It's a good one. It's strong.
Yeah,
right, boys. Is there anything else that we need to make sure we cover off? I think we've
questions.
Adam Barton. Have we got Twitter questions?
Adam Barton asks, "Why did I get blocked for Sherry's Patriots bias?"
What?
That's what.
Yeah, he must have been somebody else who you blocked, but
I didn't. But he wasn't on my list, I don't think.
Well, look, A. Barton 93, sort it out. Not you, Adam Barton, you, Will Gavin, sort it out.
I didn't think I had blocked him, but if I have, I feel really bad about it.
Alan Hasley.
He's even in our one of our fantasy leagues.
you're out of order, man. Alan Hasley, how much would you pay for a photograph with Johnny Manziel? Nothing. They would have to pay me.
Has he been charging people for photographs? Is that
no,
a store?
They said he was going to, but he tweeted saying that he wouldn't be charging anyone.
Yeah, I literally could not care less about that man.
Do you believe the home teams get more favourable calls from officials? That's from Alex.
There's a really interesting... I know I was having some fun with Patriots calls on Twitter last night. Let's not get into that, shall we? it is worth mentioning there is a really fascinating book I have read on this very topic, and I'm desperately trying to Google it right now. But there is somebody who has done a full study into the way that calls go. And... there is a slight lean home bias, but it is very, very small slight lean home bias. But it jumps up hugely in major games for home teams. And it's essentially that from what they've surmised, is that basically referees are humans. And if you've got an entire crowd of 80,000 people screaming at you, sometimes you tend to tailor your decisions in their direction.
Yeah, makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, it would only be logical.
It would only be logical, indeed. Also been offered Justin Forsett. Is he anywhere now?
I think we should just say, hi, Justin, I understand you're here to announce your retirement. Do you want to talk on that?
My spreadsheet for everyone else has, like, Texan safety, Eagles, or whatever. He's just going to have running back.
Where was he last? Was he at Detroit?
He was at Denver last, but basically, Gary Kubiak's the only guy who's ever employed him, so he is literally done now, isn't he?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. I think that's it.
Beautiful. Guys, Super Bowl 51, we'll next see you, Matt Sherry, at San Antonio Airport in 6 days. No, we won't.
Houston Airport.
If we leave Houston Airport without you because we think we're meeting you at San Antonio, that could be bad. We'll see you in...
It'll only be 5 days' time.
In 5 days... Yeah, 5 days' time in Houston Airport when we pick up our car, drive to San Antonio for the Royal Rumble. Very, very excited. So looking forward to seeing you, buddy. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks, guys, and can't wait to see you next week.
Ollie Hunter, any final thoughts?
Last of the Jedi, December.
Yeah, The Last Jedi. I quite like the name. Some people have said it's a bit underwhelming. I think it's a good name.
Considering I got it wrong, I think it's a good name. I love the logo. It's all in red. That red, it looks great. I can't wait.
Right. Right. Very exciting.
All good, man.
Good. Right, guys. All good fun. Get in touch with us at Gridiron on Twitter. Go buy tickets to our party because it's going to be great. It also helps fund us getting out to the Super Bowl to do all our really good coverage. Thanks, guys. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening. As always, we appreciate it. We love you all fans equally, whether you support the same teams as us or the Patriots. We are big fans of all of you. And I promise I will never block any of you on Twitter again. And I'm sorry once more. Thank you for listening. This has been The Gridiron Show.
The guy is drunk!
Oh, perfect.
Hey guys, it's Devon Sam here from LucasAid Sports Podcast, running the show.
Check out this week's episode where we get to meet the one and only Anthony Joshua.
Oh my goodness, do you think he wants to be friends with us now?
He told me that he wants to link up and have a bit of sparring.
Yeah, sure he did.
So head to all your podcast providers and click subscribe now. Also get in touch with us at LucasAid Sport using the hashtag running the show. You will not regret it.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.